With that, I'm going to move straight on to our first agenda item, which is talking about our non-refundable value-added tax. Sorry, tongue twister. Agenda paper 2, and I'm going to hand over to Gustavo.
Thank you, Sue. So we'll now start with agenda paper 2. This paper analyzes comments on the tentative agenda decision about how LSE accounts for non-refundable value-added tax, or VAT, charged on lease payments. In particular, whether applying IFRS 16, the LSE includes non-refundable VAT as part of the lease payments for a lease. The committee received 16 comment letters, and most respondents agree with the committee's decision not to add a standard setting project to the work plan. Paragraphs 15 to 28 of the paper include our analysis of respondents' comments. In our view, feedback on the tentative agenda decision provides little additional evidence that non-refundable VAT on lease payments is material to affected lessees or of diversity in the way lessees in similar circumstances account for non-refundable VAT on lease payments. The paper also explains why we think the agenda decision should not explain the accounting leases apply to non-refundable VAT as suggested by some respondents. We therefore continue to agree with the committee's conclusion that it has not obtained evidence that the matter has widespread effect and has or is expected to have a material effect on those affected. Therefore, we recommend finalizing the agenda decision as outlined in Appendix A to the paper. I'll now direct your attention to the question on page 6 and ask whether you agree with that recommendation. Thank you.
Okay, so who would like to talk about value-added tax? If you could use the chat, and I'll keep an eye on that to see who wants to speak. Sorry, I should have told the new members that when you want to speak, if you just put it in the chat room, that's how I follow who wants to come into the conversation. You're not usually so shy, okay. Jens.
Thank you so much, Sue. So thank you, Gustavo, for presenting the paper. And I fully agree with the staff recommendation that we should finalize the agenda decision as explained in paragraph 29 and with the minor amendments to our proposed wording. I fully agree with the reference in paragraph 26 that we should not have a reference to para 117 of IAS 1, because I agree there is no accounting policy choice. So therefore, I'm fully in alignment with the staff recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you, Jens. Donna?
Afternoon, everybody. What's up? Yes, I think I echo Jens' commentary that I do agree with the decision on the technicality based in the process handbook that we should not include this as an agenda decision. I just want to kind of, maybe this is just an observation more than anything else, is that what was interesting about this is that because it's not material and believe that the impact is not widespread, that we shouldn't actually put this on the, WITSM shouldn't have an IFRIC agenda decision about this. I do want to kind of raise the concern, or maybe the question, or something that maybe we can think a little bit about is what would be the situation if we have a widespread issue, but it's not material? Would we then still be, would we still argue that we would not actually issue a agenda decision on such items? I think just for clarity for myself, but also it was just something that kind of tickled me when I was reading through the papers and understanding where the staff was coming from about why we wouldn't want to be putting this as an agenda, actually issuing an agenda issue for something like this. So this is a question to the staff.
Yeah, thank you, Donna. Maybe I'll just respond to that. So the first thing just to clarify, of course, is that we are proposing that the committee publish an agenda decision. So the committee always publishes an agenda decision every time it decides not to undertake a standard setting project. But I think what you're addressing is when would that agenda decision not include explanatory material or kind of a technical analysis. And so I think in this case, we're focusing on the first criterion that you see in the handbook, in a sense, is it 5.16? 5.13A or 5.13A. So it's widespread effect, but actually what that criterion says, there's almost two aspects to it, Donna. It talks about the matter must have widespread effect, and it has or is expected to have a material effect on those affected. So I think to your question, if something didn't have a material effect on any entities that, you know, enter into the particular transaction or are affected, that would fail to meet that criterion as well, because there are two aspects to it. The matter needs to have widespread effect and, you know, have a material effect on those entities that are affected.
It's exactly my point. So that was, because this doesn't have a material effect, it therefore we will issue an agenda decision, but it will not give explanatory reasons, essentially. Okay. And I was just wondering, so this is more point for kind of maybe, I don't know how to articulate this nicely, but I think what was interesting about the comment letters was just how many people were asking for that type of guidance, because there is without a doubt two schools of thoughts about what you do with these types of expenses. And I'm not assuming or indicating that in terms of the technicalities within our handbook, we would, in actual fact, it's outside of our kind of basis of what we can work within. But it is something that maybe I would appreciate if we could think a little bit about it, because there are many issues that kind of crop up like this, and people will go, you know, and they actually want to bring it to the EFRAC, and then we kind of go, no, we actually don't do it because it's not material. So I think that's kind of, maybe it's an educational thing that we need to think a little bit about, because I think there's a lot of, you know, when people, at least in my jurisdiction, people say, I'm going to send this to the EFRAC, and I've got to kind of explain to them, no, it has to be material, not just widespread, for it to be within the EFRAC's domain that we would then kind of consider it. And sometimes people do want that little bit of guidance, especially when you're running multinational systems and you're international and everything is hinging, and there's this one little thing and everyone's going, okay, but someone's doing it like this, someone's doing it like that, and it's uncertainty. So it's more just a case of like something that maybe we can think a little bit about, from how do we educate people, like what we actually, I mean, I think this is an opportunity, yeah, to explain the rule, what's in our handbook, and what actually can be dealt with at the EFRAC, and then how do we in actual fact address to the greater accounting community globally when non-material items come up, but they're widespread. Is there, where would we support that? Is it something we can support? Is it something the ISB can support? So that's more an observation that I just wanted to maybe just raise with the staff this afternoon. But I do agree with the agenda decision. Thank you.
Thanks, Donna. And I think that's an important conversation. I think from my perspective, the criteria in the handbook are very important, because the Interpretations Committee is a very resource-intensive process, not just for us and for you, because we're calling on your time, but for all of our stakeholders, because for us to put something out to comment, ask people to spend time commenting on it, it ramps up a whole big system. And so we need to have, you know, filters in place to make sure that it's the really important stuff that we focus on, which is why we have those criteria. But you're right, we're always sort of thinking about whether there's other things we should or, you know, appropriately do. So it's good to have in mind. But it's also good to remind ourselves of the criteria and to make sure we're using them consistently. It's always good as well.
Absolutely agree.
John, I think you were next.
Yes, thank you. First, I'd like to just thank the staff for, I think, a well laid out paper and a good summary of the comment letters. I found it to be quite fulsome, so I appreciate the effort from the staff. I agree with the analysis as well, and the conclusion to proceed, or the proposal to proceed with the agenda decision. I do have one very minor comment on the agenda decision, which I'm glad to give now or later if you prefer to work on the wording later.
Might as well raise it now.
Okay, so the top of page 2 in the final sentence, the committee has therefore not, and then the word yet has been stricken, which is fine. But instead of saying obtained evidence, I would say received evidence. Just because if we say we have not yet obtained evidence, it sounds as if we haven't tried. And I think we have. I think the staff has been diligent in trying, and also through the comment letter process soliciting input, and we haven't received evidence that the matter is widespread or material.
Thank you. Ton.
Yeah, thank you very much. We have a
another position than the speakers before. During the March meeting, we indicated the issue is possibly more widespread, and we suggested the committee could try to answer and address the question. As indicated in the staff paper and noted by the chair during the March meeting, according to the due process handbook, the committee does not take the question if not material, not widespread, no diversity. The chair suggested to see if comment letters indicate it is more widespread. IOSCO sent a letter that is representing over 100 securities regulators. As mentioned in our comment letter, these over 100 securities regulators noted the following. These and similar tax arrangements exist in several different jurisdictions, which make the issue widespread. Further, IOSCO members believe the issue could be material for those affected, considering VAT is around 20% in a lot of countries. Members are aware of differing views of the appropriate accounting in the fact patterns submitted. The letter is confirmed by the analysis of the comment letters by the staff, and therefore we cannot agree that respondents do not report observing significant diversity in the accounting proceeding. In view of what is said before, and in the interest of consistent application of IFRS, we urge the committee to explain in the agenda decision the accounting of lessees applies. In addition, we think there is a similar question for the lessor as for the lessee. Is the VAT part of the lease payments and therefore part of the lease revenue for the lessor? We appreciate this wasn't asked, but we are assuming the lessor would need to make a principal agent analysis just as it must do for such taxes in applying IFRS 15. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom. Carsten?
Yeah, thanks. So I can keep this short. Maybe just quickly to respond to Tom's comment. I mean, I did see the IOSCO comment letter, and I had similar thoughts, to be honest. But I think, you know, looking at all the comment letters, I didn't see, you know, that as come through as a common scheme, let's say. And therefore, I do agree with the staff analysis and conclusions for the reasons explained in the staff paper, and I'm therefore supportive of finalizing the agenda decision as drafted. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Carsten. Can I get a show of hands from the committee who supports our finalization of the agenda decision?
Sue, sorry, I think you have a few more comments in the chat room.
I'm not on my machine. My machine's not working. Sorry. Okay, sorry. They're just coming through now. Sorry, I don't know. The system's not working very well. Guy, sorry. Apologies for that. Guy?
Thanks, Sue. No problem. I did have one observation. I was comfortable with the analysis as presented in the paper, subject to ensuring I properly understood the IOSCO comment letter and what it was actually observing. It wasn't clear to me whether the letter was speculating on the potential for the issue to be material and speculating on the potential for there to be diversity in similar fact patterns. It wasn't clear to me if that was just more of the same type of observation we had from the March meeting, or whether that was presenting factually additional evidence that the issue is material and that there is diversity. If it's speculative, which I think is consistent with the way the paper presented the analysis of the comment letters, I would agree with proceeding to finalize the agenda decision for all the reasons spelled out in the paper. If instead we're misinterpreting that letter and that letter is saying there is material diversity and similar fact patterns, then it strikes me that the rationale we give in the paper is inconsistent with what the comment letters are presenting. In terms of the comments that were made a moment ago, it's still not clear to me whether that letter is presenting additional evidence or whether it's speculative. It sounded to me like it still is speculative, and if that's the case, then I'm happy to proceed with the agenda decision. But if I'm still misunderstanding that letter, I think that's an important fact that I think the committee would need more information on. But again, subject to that letter being properly interpreted in the paper, I'm fine to proceed for the reasons given.
Thank you, Guy. Brian?
Thank you, Sue, and hello, everyone. I support finalising the agenda decision. I just wanted to say two things. Firstly, in terms of, is there in fact diversity? I've had this question from a number of people, and I've been struck by the fact that particularly once you get outside of Europe, the different taxes often work in slightly different ways. So for me, if we were to go further, to go down a different leg of the due process handbook kind of decision tree, it's not clear to me that that would result in an agenda decision that specified the accounting. It would be more likely, I think, to result in an agenda decision that specified the considerations that people would have to work through in order to get to the conclusion. Personally, I have seen people doing modelling to assess materiality and that kind of thing, and I tend to think what I've seen supports the view that this is not material. And my other point, which is a tiny, tiny drafting point, and I'm almost embarrassed to raise it, just at the bottom of page 10, the addition about comment letters received, should that specify that it's comment letters received on the tentative agenda decision? It's just the staff paper notes that there haven't been many comment letters on the tentative agenda decision, and also it notes that there wasn't much feedback on the EDs for IFRS 16. It says stakeholders didn't raise this as an issue, so I just wondered if it was necessary for the bottom of page 10 to specify that these are comment letters received on a tentative agenda decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Vijay.
Thanks, Sue. I just have two observations. One is I'm in sync with Guy's observations regarding the way we understand IOSCO's letter, their comments which are there. If we are clear that it is largely speculative in nature, then I think the agenda decision as finalized is perfect. The second point I have is page 2 of the agenda decision, last paragraph. I was wondering if we should add a sentence which is from the last sentence of para 27 to basically give an indication that this particular project or topic may be taken up as part of the post-implementation review. So should we add that extra sentence? I've seen that in a few agenda decisions earlier.
Thank you, Vijay. Paul, I think you were going to respond to Guy's point.
Thank you, Sue. With respect to Guy's point, the IOSCO letter is intended to report that amongst our membership, a large number of the members have observed that there are similar arrangements in their jurisdictions, and given the rate at which VAT is applied, it is likely to be material in a number of circumstances. And secondly, in our discussions, I think we have observed diversity in practice. So to Guy's specific point, the IOSCO letter was not intended to be speculative, but rather to report what we have found in a large number of jurisdictions when discussing this fact pattern with our membership.
Thank you, Paul. It might be a good point, actually, Petrina, to bring you in, because based on some of the conversations I've had with you about how you know, even if a country has these types of VAT regimes in place, why the effects may not always be material. I think that might be useful context.
Yeah, so if it's helpful, I think, you know, Paul, to support maybe what you were and Tom were saying about your input, certainly from anything we've heard otherwise as well, we do understand that, you know, it can happen, you know, across numerous jurisdictions that there can be some entities that, you know, can't recover all of the VAT that might be charged on their purchases. And certainly the most common example that is come up that we've heard this is in the sort of banking sector, so for banks or financial institutions. And often the reason is because a big part of a bank's income comes from interest, and very often interest is VAT exempt, then consequently the tax authorities don't want to allow the banks to be able to recover all of the VAT that's included in their sort of purchases. However, because it involves banks, by the way, at least again, in our conversations with a number of banks from different jurisdictions, what we've also heard, at least to sort of fit into what we were told before about, you know, is this material or not, it's very often not the case, or at least we're aware that it's very often is the case, that it's not all of the VAT that actually ends up being non-refundable. So even if, for example, the VAT rate is, say, 20% in a jurisdiction, it's only a piece of that that ends up being non-refundable. And at least some conversations we had with some of the banks said that for them, and obviously also given the size of a bank's financial statements as well, at least we were aware it wasn't material for some of those banks that we spoke to. So I thought I'd just add that if it's helpful, because I think an important fact is what we heard, that it's not just because there's 20% VAT charged in a particular jurisdiction that exists that means all 20% is non-refundable. It's very often only a piece of that ends up being non-refundable.
Okay, thanks, Petrina. I hope that's helpful. It's helpful context for me. Okay, Mary, would you like to come in, please?
Yes, I just wanted to come in about the suggestion to add an observation about the post-implementation review into the agenda decision itself. Well, I think it's a helpful reminder in the staff to have in the staff paper. I'd counsel against including that in the agenda decision itself. First of all, it feels like it's singling out this issue, and actually one of the kind of standard steps of a post-implementation review is for the staff to look back and review all of the issues that were submitted to the interpretation committee about the standard that is the subject of the post-implementation review. So it automatically comes back on the radar screen that way. And I think if we start highlighting it in every agenda decision, then it just becomes boilerplate. And if we highlight it only in some, then it maybe implies a differential significance that doesn't exist. So I, you know, as a board observer, I'd caution against adding that, baking that into the agenda decision itself. Thank you.
And having said that, it doesn't mean, for example, that if we get new evidence that there actually is a different outcome from a materiality perspective at the time that the PIR comes along, that would be a relevant piece of information. But I think Mary's point is more probably not including it in the actual agenda decision, given the formality of those decisions as well. Okay, now before I take have I missed anybody? I've got a bit of a time lag on my chat here, unfortunately, so I can't see anybody waving frantically at me. So hopefully that means I haven't missed anybody. So Petrina, would you like to summarise what you heard in terms of suggestions on tweaks to the agenda decision, and then I'll take a vote on it.
So I think we heard at the, I'm looking now at page 10, the first page of Appendix A, and I think we had a suggestion just to add a piece of clarity around the words added, comment letters received, that maybe we say comment letters received on the tentative agenda decision. And also over the page 11, we had a suggestion to change obtained to received, so it would say the committee has therefore not received evidence that the matter is widespread effect, etc.
Okay, so with those tweaks, could I get a show of hands from the committee on who supports finalising the agenda decision?
Two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, I can see on screen.
And on the phone, Brian? Yes,
that might support finalisation.
Yep. Okay. So that's enough to finalise. Sorry, somebody.
I'm on the phone. Renata.
Oh, Renata. Great. Do you support the agenda decision?
Yeah, I vote for the agenda.
Thank you so much, Renata, and welcome.
Thank you.
So that's 10.
That's 10.
Okay. Thank you very much. So that will go to the board, I guess, in the usual way.
Yep.
So that will go to the board as a next step in the new usual way. Okay, thank you very much, Gustavo. All right, so now changing on to an FI topic, Agenda Paper 3, and handing over to Angie.